Let's go on from there to Leviticus 23, verse 23. There's a brief mention of New Year's Day. Speak to the people of Israel, saying, in the seventh month, on the first day of the month, you shall observe a day of complete rest, a holy convocation commemorated with trumpet blasts. You shall not work. You shall present to the Lord an offering of fire. The New Year's Day is the seventh month. The way they were calculating these months, that puts us into September, and that's Rosh Hashanah. That's what you would currently call Rosh Hashanah. That's the beginning of the new year. Now, there's not a lot said about this particular feast in this in the scriptures that we have here, and that is that's not as significant of a date in the calendar compared to some of the other ones that we're going to talk about. But it was a feast day, the marking of the new year. We go on then to verse 26, the Day of Atonement. Now, the tenth day of this seventh month is the Day of Atonement. It shall be a holy convocation for you. You shall deny yourselves and present the Lord an offering by fire. The Day of Atonement, this again would put us somewhere in September or October, according to our calendar. Yom Kippur is this Day of Atonement, so it's a day of penance. Probably the closest thing I could compare that to in our Christian tradition was the old idea of having Ember Days. Do you remember that? The tradition of Ember Days. Be the idea of a periodic day of penance that we would do, a day of atonement, a day to repent of sinfulness. So a single day that kind of stands out in that way. And then after that, then we get to another very significant feast as we move on to the Feast of Booths. And let me back up for just a second with the Day of Atonement. Well, one of the things about the Day of Atonement is they would offer a bull as a sacrifice. And according to the Levitical ritual, they would offer that bull as a sacrifice not only for the sins of the tribe of Levi and the house of Aaron, but they would also go into the Holy of Holies and sprinkle inside the Holy of Holies with the blood of the bull. Now, the reason why this was so significant is because this was one of the days at which they could actually enter into the Holy of Holies. This was a very rare moment because we know that they didn't do this very often. We talked about the outer court where they would sacrifice, have the altar of sacrifice. They'd enter into the sanctuary where they would have the altar of incense and the showbread. And then inside, after that, the Holy of Holies. That innermost sanctum was not entered very often, but this Day of Atonement was one of the days to do that. By shaking the blood, things are purified by blood. So you go in, they would shake the blood as a way of reconsecrating that space after, of course, sins always have the effect of defiling, and so it was annually reconsecrated in order to make up for that defilement. And this also would have been one of the times at which they would take the goat that they would say would be for Azazel. Remember, the last time we talked just briefly about the scapegoat, that was one of the passages at which you confess the sins of the people over the head of the goat, and then you drive the goat out into the desert. This would be another one of the things that they would do celebrating the Day of Atonement, is they bring in two goats. One they would confess the sins over and drive it away. The other one they would sacrifice to the Lord. And offer up that goat as a sin offering, or as a guilt offering for the sins of the people. So those are all things that are connected with the Day of Atonement. Then after that, we get to the Feast of Booths, and B-O-O-T-H, Booths. Okay, don't misunderstand me there. The verse 34, speak to the people of Israel, saying, on the 15th day of the seventh month, and lasting 7 days, there shall be a festival of booths to the Lord. Now, do you have anything different in your Bibles? Anything other than booths?
Tabernacles?
Shelters? Okay. That word shelter is an interesting choice for that translation. We'll talk about why in a little bit. Anything else that you have? So those are the Feast of Booths, Feast of Tabernacles, Feast of Shelters. The other big significance for this passage is that it's also another major day of harvest. You know how there are some things where there'd be harvest in the springtime, but the fall is your main date of harvest. The This Feast of Tabernacles, or Sukkot, is celebrated in September, October, so this is really the fall harvest. From an agricultural point of view, this is really when you brought in the whole thing. There were many things that they would harvest. Among the things that they would bring in would be the grapes for wine. There'd be the olives for the olive oil for oil presses, as well as all sorts of produce from the fields. They would have just tremendous things that they would be bringing in to the threshing floors in order to beat out all of the grain and to gather all of that, to separate the wheat from the chaff, and then to rejoice in the bounty of the harvest that was received. So again, there was an agricultural sense. In an agricultural sense, you might call this a little bit like Thanksgiving Day. This would be the sense of the harvest, what we would talk about as Thanksgiving. It would have the same kind of overtone to it, that gratitude for all of the gifts that had been received. But in addition to that, we say it always has a religious significance as well. And so you have in the Feast of Tabernacles, the idea here is that they would remind themselves of was the dwelling in the tents while they were traveling in the desert. They would be reminded of the fact that they had spent 40 years in exile in the desert living in tents. What was the other word we had? Not tabernacles, but shelters, the Feast of Shelters. One of the things that they would do is for 7 days they would go live in a tent, or they would go live in a lean-to, or whatever you would want to call this. So they would construct a temporary dwelling. This is something that changed at different points in Israel's history. One of the things that they were commemorating was the fact that they had to live in tents. So part of it had to do with tents. Once the temple was built, oftentimes they would think of building these lean-tos that would be next to the temple. So they would want to be near the temple at this time as well. From an agricultural point of view, if you had to go out into the field to work at the harvest, because this was a time of just tremendous labor to bring in the harvest that was there, if you had to live out in the field while you were doing this work, you would construct some temporary dwelling. So even in an agricultural sense, there is a reason then to celebrate this kind of festival of reminding themselves of having to live apart for a while. So here's this time, 7 days of living apart for a little bit in these temporary dwellings. The spiritual reminder that is there has to do with the time of exile that they had in the desert. Now, one of the things, I don't think we talked about this detail very much, because I don't think I drew out this part of the passage. But do you know why they had to spend 40 years in the desert? That represents a generation, that's correct. But there was a specific reason why. What had happened is after they got to Sinai and they initiated the covenant, then Moses told them to send out scouts from the various tribes, from all the tribes of Israel. And so scouts went out and they said, go check out the land and see what it's like. Tell us, you know, if it is bountiful. Tell us if the people there are strong. Tell us if this is going, do they live in cities? Are they well fortified? So tell us about this land that we are going to, this land that we are to be given. And they come back with a report saying that it truly is a land flowing with milk and honey. We used that expression a moment ago. It is a land with a rich harvest. It is a land that has been blessed by the Lord. But the people who are living there are strong and fierce, and we will, you know. So it was one of these reports that says, yes, it's very good, but there are already people there, and this is going to be a very difficult task. And so the people then began to be afraid, as often happened. And so you had Joshua at that point was one of the ones who said, no, we can do this. We should proceed ahead. But because the bulk of the people of Israel were too afraid to do that, and they would not trust in the Lord, and they would not follow Joshua's the strength of his passion about that, then the Lord said, because of this, then I will give this land to their children, but no one from this generation will see that promised land. So instead, for 40 years, I will make them wander around in the desert until finally I bring them in, and then I will give them the land, as the Lord intervenes in that kind of a way. And we'll get to this as we talk about conquering Jericho and all of this, as they do eventually come into the land. But one of the reasons they had to be out in the desert is because of their stubbornness, their refusal to trust in God, and to believe that He could actually deliver the land for them. So as a reminder of living in the tents in the desert, when you're celebrating the Feast of Tabernacles, you are reminding yourselves that our fathers were so stubborn that the Lord made them live out in the desert for 40 years because of their stubbornness and their refusal to trust. So by going out and living for 7 days in a temporary dwelling, by doing this kind of penance, you might say, denying themselves, they're reminding themselves of the sin and the guilt of their ancestors who refused to trust in the Lord. And it's almost, so it's sort of, it's almost a kind of a Lenten spirit of recognizing our own sinfulness. And it's a kind of a doing penance in a sense. So they might never forget what their ancestors had to go through. And of course, one of the things that then you really celebrate in that is the gift of the land, because when they finally were given the land, what a great blessing it was. So here is the land is yielding its harvest, and you're giving thanks for the land. You're giving thanks for the fact that the Lord has brought them into the promised land after having dwelt in the desert for those 40 years. So those are some of the things that have to do with this notion of tabernacles or booths, or did anyone say tents? Did that come up? Was tent in anyone's translation that is there? Shelters. Because one of the reasons why I'm going to talk about tents is because the name of the feast day is Sukkot, which is the idea of a tent or a dwelling. And this is going to come up in the New Testament in a moment. When they talk about the tents, and the Greek word for tent is skene, and this will happen every now and then. We have in Hebrews the notion of the dwelling in a tent. They carried about the tabernacle within a tent. So the word tent is going to come back, and we'll talk about that in just a bit. So now with this particular feast day, I went on to another passage from Luke 9 because we again get this notion of booths or tabernacles. And so here's this passage from Luke 9 about the transfiguration. The transfiguration, this part is, I think, well known. As they go up the high mountain, they see Jesus transfigured in dazzling white. They see with him Moses and Elijah. And then we hear Peter say to Jesus, this is Luke 9, and I'm looking now at verse 33. Peter then says to Jesus, "Master, it is good that we are here. Let us make three booths, one for you and one for Moses and one for Elijah." Now, have you ever had that passage and wonder, what is he doing? He wants to make three booths. Why would he do that? If you've ever been puzzled by that passage, well, that is the skene, that is the sukkot. That is the notion of the dwelling in those tents or booths or tabernacles. And so part of what that passage is referring to is that, well, this is a time then for us to celebrate by staying here on this mountain in temporary shelters. So let us remain here and let us then bask in the glory of the transfiguration that we've just seen. So that idea of the temporary shelters that you stay in so you can remain in that particular place. So that's part of the significance of why Peter said that. It would also be a way of connecting that transfiguration with a very important feast day in the Jewish calendar. So one of the things that, like if we talk about, well, how do we celebrate something? You connect, oftentimes when we celebrate something, we connect with something that we already know about or something that we're already familiar with. Well, here is a tradition that they're very familiar with. So he said, well, this would be a natural way then for us to celebrate or to honor or to recognize the significance of this transfiguration. So there he wants to build the Sukkot. There on the Mountain of Transfiguration. One other passage, and this is one I did not put in the list here, but if you want to add it in, I will add this one in. It's John 1, verse 14. And it's the famous passage from the introduction of John's Gospel, talking about the Word became flesh. This is all part of John's prologue. And I'll just read this verse, John 1, verse 14. "The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us, and we have seen his glory, the glory of an only Son coming from the Father, filled with enduring love." Now, the word for made his dwelling comes from skene, which is the word for tent. It's a verb meaning to pitch your tent with us. So if you're going to say that someone's going to dwell with us or stay with us, the old sense of that, they say, well, come pitch your tent with us. Come remain with us. That's sort of the root basis of that word. So part of the idea of the incarnation, Jesus becoming flesh, is that Jesus came to dwell with us. He spent time with us. And using that same word for tent, you could say, if I were to sort of put it in a very, very literal kind of way, he pitched his tent with us. And that's part of the way in which John describes the incarnation, that Jesus, who is distant, God who is in heaven, has come to us to live with us, to abide among us. And that's one of the profound ways of talking about the incarnation. That's going to be important when I start talking about relating Old Testament feasts to our New Testament calendar.